It's time for Retro Talk with Retro Rose here on
WXPM
on 98.5
FM.
This is Retro Rose with another fun episode. This time we're going to spotlight on the fun games we remember our parents watching. Mainly my mom. She used to watch a lot of game shows. Today, I have Mike Bro joining me.
The Bro Show is here, ready to rock and roll.
And I have Connor joining me. Connor is the behind the man that does all the great recording for me. He's an amazing talent. And I got to get him on my show more often. Right, Connor?
Yes, Rose. Thank you so much. Yeah, happy to be here and discussing all the game shows. Very excited about it.
And Connor actually is a huge fan of gaming shows, so we're going to see what all we can get from him. Like, maybe we can have like a trivia contest at some point.
Oh, easily. Oh, yeah. Easily. I would ace it.
Oh, I definitely. I think we need to pick his brain about shows that were before he was born.
I think we need to like give him a list of different game shows and see how many people he can list was the host.
You know,
Like, for example, if I were to say Family Feud.
Well, there was Richard Dawson, Ray Combs, Louis Anderson, Richard Karn, John O'Hurley, and today there is Steve Harvey.
All right. How about,
oh, wow. Okay. We're in trouble.
This one, I bet you he will not be able to answer.
Okay.
I don't know if I can even answer it. The Gong Show.
Well, that was, of course, hosted by Chuck Barris. And I believe there was another version that was hosted by Gary Owens, if I'm remembering that correctly. I know that there was a revival several years ago that had Mike Myers as the host, if I'm remembering correctly. Yeah. So and I think there were one or two other revivals that had different hosts as well.
All right. And one more. Let's just test him. Test him to see if he knows. Treasure Hunt.
Treasure Hunt. Yes. The one and only Jeff Edwards.
All right. So before we go too far along, I want fans and listeners to know what our favorite games are. My favorite game shows. I shouldn't say games because there's a lot of other games out there.
That's a whole different show.
Yeah, that's a whole different show. My favorite game show was always The Price is Right.
Yeah, that's a perennial favorite. That was mine too. It was, and it's not, you know, that Drew Carey who's hosting now is bad or anything, but I think I have a special place in my heart for Bob Barker. Because you felt like he was talking to you. He made your days better when you were sitting there watching him. And you envisioned yourself winning the prizes with the lowest retail price.
And let me tell you, I think I might have mentioned this to Connor last week, that Tony had a brother that actually was on, he wasn't actually called up on The Price is Right, but he was in the crowd.
He was
in that crowd for The Price is Right.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and The Price is Right is an excellent choice for a favorite show. There's definitely a lot to like about it. Obviously, it's a different show every day, all the different games that they play on that show. And yeah, Bob Barker was truly one of a kind. He definitely drummed up the suspense like few others could. Like every time he would start to reach for the actual price, and then he would say, "Isn't this exciting? Are you so excited?" And then he would eventually lift
it
up.
He got an awful lot of hugs, too.
Yes, he did.
The ladies loved him.
He got an awful lot of hugs.
And he had the $100 bill in his jacket from time to time that he would pull
out. Reach into it to get that $100
bill.
Yeah,
I mean, I can almost go on and on and on, but about what these hosts would get all these hugs and kisses and everything.
Well, Richard Dawson especially.
Oh, yeah.
But what was your two favorites? For Mike and Connor, what was your two favorite game shows?
I mean, honestly, I was a huge fan of Let's Make a Deal when Monty Hall hosted it.
Yeah, that was a real, that was a fun game. That was way back in the day when you would see people in their craziest costumes. I know there's a Wayne Brady version now that's,
Yeah, he's doing good. No, he's doing good. And actually, Monty Hall was a producer on that up until he passed away.
Really?
A number of years ago. Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, Monty Hall actually handpicked Wayne Brady and said that this is the guy who has what it takes to host this show. So,
wow. Okay.
Yeah. I always like making Let's Make a Deal. I always love that. I got Mom actually the game.
Okay.
Of Let's Make a Deal. I actually got Mom a game a few years back that was at a flea market. And it was Concentration.
Oh, yes.
I mean, that was a game show.
That is one of the hardest game shows I can even recall. Like, that was such a hard format. Because first you had the memory game aspect of it.
Yes.
But then you had to figure out what the pictures were forming.
Yep.
Yep.
And you didn't even get the whole picture. You had to work with just what was revealed. It was like, that is one of the hardest game show formats
yes, by far. Yes, yes, yes. And actually, I beat her butt all the time on that board game. But it was designed the same way. Because this is an old game. You know, this is...
Yes.
I got this at a flea market. It's from either the early 80s or late 70s.
Oh, yeah.
And, it, you know, it's a great game to play, but some of the things that you read off of it now just don't relate to anything now. So if you're trying to solve what it's saying, it's like,
yeah. Yeah, a lot of archaic, like, phrases and pop culture references that, you know, are relevant now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and you see that in the reruns, too. Like, they show reruns of it on Buzzer nowadays.
Yeah, because I was going to say, there is a couple gaming show channels, and Buzzer is one of them. I don't know if there's another or not, but I...
Yeah, so Buzzer came out when my senior year of high school. But then there was the Game Show Network that launched in the 90s. Nowadays, they focus on really creating their own game shows, just like, you know, fun little, like, trivia formats.
Right.
You know, but, like, nothing too, like, substantial. Nothing that, you know, you really go out of your way to see. Like, not like event television. But
yeah.
It's enjoyable for what it is.
I mean, you can, too. I know that sometimes Tony will watch favorite episodes of Price is Right on YouTube.
Yes. There's like thousands of episodes on YouTube of that show. Yeah.
I mean, I'm not going to mention a whole lot of the games, but I was looking at that one of that Tony likes to watch a lot of is the cliffhanger game.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You could almost like play a theme song of that.
Yes.
And it, he got so close sometimes, so close.
Yes.
But I like that one, and I like the one where they Plunkett, I think.
Oh, Plinko.
Plinko.
I love Plinko. That's such a fun game.
And yeah. There was one that was like almost like a nutshell one, wasn't there?
Where the shell game.
The shell
yeah,
game.
They don't do that anymore, do they?
No, they play that one still.
Do they? Okay, I haven't seen it in a while.
Yeah.
There's probably some they've retired, though, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
I haven't watched Price is Right in ages.
Yeah, so actually I went to the Price is Right Live. They have a touring show.
Okay.
And yeah, they randomly pick people out of the studio audience. And
oh, really?
Yeah, they come to Bethlehem generally once a year. And 2017, 2018, I got to go see it. It was hosted by Todd Newton in 2017 and Mark L. Wahlberg in 2018. And yeah, they play all the most popular games from there. They play Plinko. They spin the big wheel. All that stuff. They do like the race game. All that fun Yeah, stuff that you see on the actual show. Much smaller prizes, obviously, but it gets
right.
Very exciting nevertheless. And yeah, it's like a whole like arena.
Wow.
Yeah, packed with people. It's
and they
so
just
much
draw
fun.
They draw people out randomly.
Yep.
Wow.
Completely random.
And of course, the catchphrase for everybody to get onto the stage and whatnot is the "Come on down," you
come
know,
on
or
down.
"Come on down,
Connor, come on down."
Right. Yes. Yeah, so that was Johnny Olsen back in the day. Johnny Olsen was the original announcer.
Yep.
Wheel.
Yep. And then it was, of course, the one that you will probably remember is Rod Roddy.
That's who I remember.
Yep, from also of Press Your Luck fame, of course.
Yeah, I
right.
always loved Press Your Luck. Yep, Press Your Luck. And I was going to mention Joker's Wild, too.
Joker's Wild.
I haven't
yes.
seen that one in a long time, but I remember my mom watching that a lot.
Yeah, so the Joker's Wild was actually created in the early 70s by Jack Barry. I don't know how familiar you are with the quiz show scandals, but Jack Barry played a major role in that, unfortunately. So
wow.
That was the mid-60s, wasn't it?
This is something
the late
50s. This is something I didn't know.
Yeah, so that happened in the late 50s. They were rigging the outcome of game shows to you know, draw as big a television audience as possible to give the, you know, contestants that America wanted to see win the advantage over everybody else. And so yeah, once the networks found out about that, they completely nixed all the sponsors that were pressuring the production company to alter the outcome of the game. And then it ended in a congressional investigation. New laws were passed to prevent that from ever happening again. And Jack Barry's career was pretty much over for
oh,
a long
wow.
time.
Yeah.
But then in the early 70s, he created the Joker's Wild. And that was really his entry back into the industry. And yeah, it was a wonderful show.
Yeah,
it was an
it was.
Excellent
yeah.
show. And he was an excellent host.
Now that Now, we've got someone here that's talking with us that really knows this game
show. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I'm almost tempted to have him say the game show's A to Z of what he knows, but we might not have enough time.
We need more than 45 minutes.
We might not have enough time.
You need more than 45 minutes for that one. Yep. More than an hour.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. I used to watch that one, though, and I don't want to go too far back, but there was like one Gong Show.
The Gong Show. Oh,
now,
yes.
The Gong Show, actually, correct me if I'm wrong, but wasn't that like a talent contest?
Yeah.
It was a tongue-in-cheek talent contest. So they would have, some of them were genuinely talented, but most of them were just like, terrible novelty acts.
Because I remember it very slightly, because I was pretty young when
yeah,
it was on.
Yeah, a lot of them were just trying to, get on TV, have their, 15 minutes in the limelight. But, my dad said that he lived in Philly. He grew up in Philly, and he said that everybody in Philly watched that first day that the Gong Show premiered, because Chuck Barris, of course, was from Philadelphia.
Oh, so it wasn't aired in Philadelphia?
No, it was in L.A., But yeah, Chuck Barris was a Philly guy.
Wow.
So when that actually, when they failed, like they didn't pass the test or whatever they were supposed to be doing the show, that's when they would hit the gong, right?
Yep. Yeah. They would lead the contestants on to make them think they were doing a good job. And then they would just humiliate them by slowly going up to the gong and, getting all dramatic with it before they strike
it. Yeah, before they strike it.
So essentially this was a precursor to what we see with America's Got Talent now.
Yes.
Is that what it was?
A little more mean-spirited than that, but
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, because I was pretty young, because that came out in 76, so that shows you how old I was at the time. But I do remember, them putting on little shows, and I remember the gong.
Yeah, it was definitely an entertaining one, without question.
Yeah, and I remember Family Feud has been out forever. I mean, there's so many different... I mean, how far back does that even go?
Goes back as long as the Gong Show, 76.
Goes back to the Gong Show?
Yeah, well, same year. We were talking about the Gong Show beforehand, how that was a tongue-in-cheek show. But Match Game was another one where it was less so about the game and more about the antics that the quote-unquote celebrities would get into. And, of course, they weren't really celebrities most of the time.
there was a lot of celebrity shows.
Yes, some of the celebrities were well-known, like TV stars, but a lot of them were just... They were famous for being on game shows.
Yeah, I mean, I seem to remember a lot of actors that were from the 60s and 70s.
Yeah, they would show up.
The guys from MASH, what was his name?
Alan Alda.
Of course. Alda.
Yeah,
yes.
He was on there all the time.
Jamie Farr.
Yeah, there was a lot of them that was
And Gary
repeats.
Berkoff. Yep, Gary Berkoff did a lot of game shows.
I think the other one who I loved to see on shows was Betty White.
Yes.
She was on so many different ones.
She was the best password player ever.
Because that's where you found out she was a little more naughty than you thought she was.
Oh, yeah.
Some of the things she would come up with.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
She was a dirty girl.
Yeah, but she actually married the host of Password.
I know.
Yeah.
And that was the only husband she had.
Yeah, the only husband she had. They met on Password, and it was a happy marriage until, unfortunately, he passed away from cancer in the early 80s. But, yeah, it's a beautiful story, Betty and Alan.
Oh, man. Yeah, for me. And then, of course, because I'm an ALF guy, ALF was always on Hollywood Squares.
Yes, with John Davidson.
That's right.
ALF was always on Hollywood version. Squares. See, that's something I didn't know either.
Yeah, and Hollywood Squares is coming back with Drew Barrymore.
Yeah. So, yeah, potentially another opportunity for ALF to come back as well.
I know. Well, she said she's going to be the center square.
Yes.
I know it's kind of shifting from the 70s shows and everything, but do you remember a lot of the ones that were geared towards kids, like Remote Control, Starcade, and Funhouse?
Starcade.
Yeah, Starcade was a great one. Remote Control wasn't really for kids. That was on MTV,
it was for teenagers.
Was it teenagers?
No, it was like college kids. It wasn't teenagers. Yeah, it was like a little more mature than a Nickelodeon show.
Oh, let's be honest, the teenagers are still watching it.
Oh yeah, without question. Yeah.
I mean, Starcade would have actually been a fun game to play. I would have lost. I know if I ever went on that show, I would have lost.
I can't do video games in like 30 seconds. I struggle with that, accumulating as many points as possible in 30 seconds. Like, it looks like a very fun game, a very challenging game, but I don't think I'd be able to do it.
I mean, can you imagine going home back in the 1980s, early 1980s, with your own arcade game?
Oh, man, that would have been sick. Yeah, that would have been awesome.
See, that's where should have, if Starcade was on still during like 86 or 84 or whatever, they could have had Last Starfighter even featured on there or something. That it just didn't make it that far, sadly.
Yeah, I mean, that would have been so much fun.
Mm-hmm.
That would have been so much fun. Yeah. I will say there's a show that I cannot remember right now. It's and I think it was a game show, or maybe it was just a contest. You ever see that where they had like a Toys R Us where you could have that run around with a shopping cart? Wasn't there a game
show? No, that is a game show. Supermarket Sweep.
That was it. Okay. I was going to say, I didn't know if that was like a contest where you could win.
That was a contest that you could win, but Supermarket Sweep, I think, is what set that off.
Yeah, because you could fill up the cart and... What was it? You got to keep everything, or was it that you got the money value?
So the way that it worked was that, you would try to fill up the cart. You spend the first half of the show building up time by answering questions and about prices and such. And then you would earn that time to run around the store, fill up your cart. You did win everything, or at least the cash value of it that you put in the cart. But then you play the bonus round for like 10 grand or something like that.
All right.
So yeah, that was in the 90s with David Ruprecht.
So when you get the highest end stuff, that's probably why everybody went for the meat and the higher end.
And like the makeup. Yeah.
Yeah. The stuff that would cost more. Yeah. Because they would, if they got the money value, it would make, you know, make sense.
So if you put the makeup on the meat, would it make it more valuable? I'm just saying.
Yep. I haven't tried that before, but you never know.
You never know. Well, they always say, put lipstick on a pig. I'm just saying.
So, Remote Control was like an MTV show, though, right?
Yes.
Yeah, that was an MTV show.
But it wasn't a kid show.
No, it wasn't a key. Yeah, it wasn't for kids. It was very popular with college kids. And I forget the name of the host. It was, unfortunately, he died about 15 years ago.
Not Kurt Loder.
It was
Tony.
Like,
Tony in the basement just said his name.
Ken Ober.
That's it. Yes.
Thank you, Tony in the basement.
Now, was that
knock on
Remote
wood.
Control? Though, was that like geared towards? And now this is. I remember bits and pieces, but I don't really.
Yeah. So
remember
the bonus round. It was the bonus round. They actually do like play music videos.
Yeah. Is that what it is? Music videos. Yeah. You have to guess what it is.
Yeah. So a lot of it is about music, but a lot of it's also just about like pop culture in general, I believe.
Okay. Yep. So it was. It did have.
Yeah. It was about like stuff that you would see on TV.
Yeah. Okay.
And the guy was a huge game show fan who had pictures behind him of Bill Cullen and Bob Barker on the set of Remote Control. He would have those pictures behind him while he hosted the show.
Yeah, I mean, it's been years, but I remember bits and pieces. I mean, like I said, it was more like what my mom was watching at the time.
Yeah.
It's like most kids, you know, whatever your parents are watching, that's what you got to watch.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it was The Price is Right when I was home from school sick or anything like that. But then at night, you also got like things like Wheel of Fortune and Jeopardy and things like that, too. Like,
and
those
my
are
mom
the perennials.
Still watches all those, too.
It was Alex Trebek and Pat Sajak in my house every night when I was a child.
Oh,
we always
gosh.
Watched them, yes.
Yeah, you can't go wrong with that. And Vanna White the entire time, too.
Yep, like, Vanna White, too.
And she hosted every so often, a little bit in the later years, I think, because she's going to take over for like 1 year right now.
I mean, you remember the Vanna White dolls they used to have?
Oh, yeah.
They still have them out there where you can find them sometimes. But Vanna White dolls back in the 80s.
Yeah, so Vanna White is not going to become the host now that Pat Sajak has retired. It's actually going to be Ryan Seacrest as the new host of Wheel of Fortune. And then Vanna will continue as the co-host, though.
Oh, wow.
Okay, as long as Vanna stays on.
Yeah, Vanna's still going to be there. Yeah.
Okay, good.
Yeah, for another 2 years at least.
Yep. Well, how old is she?
She's,
if they probably don't tell the true age.
Yeah, it's on Wikipedia. I think she's in her late 60s, I think.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, so she's been doing this since she was really young.
Yeah, she was very young when she started, yep. And, she actually auditioned for the daytime version because originally Wheel of Fortune was hosted by Chuck Woolery and Susan Stafford.
That's right.
Yes. But Chuck Woolery got mad that he wasn't making as much as the other game show hosts in that time period. So, he quit the show because of that, because Merv Griffin was too cheap to give him the salary he wanted. And then Merv Griffin was interesting in the sense that he went for offbeat game show hosts when like he made his selection. Chuck Woolery, he actually found by watching a talk show where he sang, because he was a country singer at the time, and he thought, this guy has a great personality, I want him to host a show of mine.
Oh, wow.
So that's how Chuck Woolery got chosen to host Wheel of Fortune. And then when Chuck Woolery left, he needed a replacement host. He was flipping the channels in Los Angeles and saw this guy doing the weather. And then all of a sudden in the studio, the power went out and Pat Sajak was going like, oh, we have a lot of overcast right now. We have no visibility. And so Merv Griffin decided this guy is perfect. And he parlayed that into over four decades as host of Wheel of Fortune.
Wow.
Oh, my gosh.
So Chuck Woolery, is this before or after Love Connection?
Before Love Connection. Love Connection came later.
Okay.
And that is a very interesting show in of itself.
That show scares me, just what they did. Even as a kid when I was like, 10, 12 years old, even I got that, I don't think this is right. Like, something's not right here. I don't understand why they're picking who they're dating. The audience is picking who they're going to actually date.
That's right.
Oh.
Yeah. So I think it was based on the video dating phenomenon of like the 80s. And so they decide that we'll introduce the three contestants the same way that you would on those VHS tapes that you'd use on a dating service. And so, yeah, the audience picked who you went out with. And then the show gives you $100 to go on the date. And then more often than not, it was a complete disaster. They talk about the next day and the date went horribly wrong one way or another. And then they were given a chance at another date. Most of them said no. And that was the whole show. It had to be like the lowest budget show in television, I swear.
Oh, God. I can't even imagine. So many hearts broken on that show.
Yes.
Wasn't there there was never a kissing game though, right?
Oh.
There was the dating game.
Yeah, the dating game. That's the one where a lot of like actors and stuff kind of showed up for themselves for the first time.
Yeah.
You would see them there. And it wasn't because they were looking for a date. It's because it was not staged, but somewhat staged.
Yeah. So the way it worked was that they would have the bachelorette as the woman who picks out who she wants to go on a date with. But then there's the wall between her and the bachelor.
So you couldn't see him. Yeah.
So she had to go solely off of the answers she got from the three contestants. And so, of course, she's not going to know that one of them is a superstar, right?
Yeah.
So that's what made it so entertaining a lot of the time when they brought a celebrity into the mix.
So she could end up on a date with one of the superstars.
Yes.
Wow.
I don't know how many lasting relationships came out of either show.
I mean, was there any time, I guess there was times that she probably, the female would actually, one of the lady would pick out a superstar, right?
Every once in a while. I think there was one episode that Schwarzenegger was on, and I think she actually did pick Schwarzenegger.
I wonder if she recognized his voice or...
Yeah, I don't know if he was actually famous yet. Maybe he was, maybe he wasn't, isn't that funny?
Yeah, I've heard it, but like I said, a lot of the games, it was kind of like what my mom was watching. So I didn't really watch the dating game too much.
Yeah, those were the days back then. Yeah, they were willing to put any game show format that you could think of on the air. They were willing to try out anything back in the 70s.
I mean, like I said, for me, it was a lot of games like, yep. I do know she used to watch Jeopardy a lot. Connor, you were just telling me something about Weird Al and how he brought back the Jeopardy show.
Yeah, so I want to thank Mike for reminding me of this. But so Jeopardy started in the mid-60s. It ran for about a decade. But eventually, it was, the TV landscape was changing in the 70s. You know, they wanted, younger hosts, more flashy formats, and Art Fleming wasn't cutting it for NBC anymore. So the show got canceled. Merv Griffin was given the chance to create Jeopardy's replacement, which was Wheel of Fortune. But then eventually in the 80s, when the song Jeopardy became a hit by the Greg Kinn Band, Weird Al Yankovic did a parody, I Lost on Jeopardy. And in the music video, he had the original host, Art Fleming. And that generated interest in the revival, like a potential revival. And they decided that... they wanted to have Alex Trebek host it. Alex Trebek was a fairly well-known game show host at the time, but not a huge host.
Yeah.
And yep, they made a bigger money Jeopardy revival every evening in the 80s, and it took off, and we are still watching it today.
Yeah, so that's crazy. I mean, the original Jeopardy show, though, was it like the newer ones from the 80s where it would say what is, or
they did say what is, but the money amounts were a lot smaller. Not only were the money amounts a lot smaller, but on the original version, the contestants that did not win actually kept the money that they won. And that became a big issue where a lot of contestants would just stop ringing in after they got an amount of money they were happy with. So they, for the new one in the 80s, in 84, premiered 40 years ago, this year actually, they've changed it so that only the winning contestant keeps their money.
Okay, because everybody was being smart, so they wouldn't lose their money.
Yep. Yeah. Oh, that's why they call it Jeopardy, because if you get the answer wrong, you lose the money. Nowadays, that's very commonplace on game shows. But back then, in the 1964, that was not common.
Yeah, where they would keep... Because I remember that, I mean, I guess even on Wheel of Fortune, they do get to keep some of their money, the money that they win, right?
If they solve the puzzle, they keep all the money they earn from that. Yep.
Okay. So they, even if you don't win the main game on that one, you get to take something home.
Yes.
Yeah. So, you know, on Jeopardy, though, there was a lot of... I was watching, like I said the other day, I mean, earlier, the Gilligan's Island thing.
Right.
They had, like, on Jeopardy, they had, what is Gilligan's Island? It would have, like, episode questions.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I guess they did that with a lot of things with Jeopardy, didn't they?
I noticed that something that they've had on Jeopardy over the years, they'll often have a category where... it'll be like a group, a cast members of a TV show, and they read off all the clues. They read off all the answers.
Yeah.
And they'll do that from time to time. Sometimes it'll be like, you know, it could be Sesame Street. It could be the Big Bang Theory.
Yeah, they do a lot of theme ones, right?
Yeah, and that's pretty cool. It's a way
kind of like a video daily double or something like that.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, it keeps things it keeps it interesting, I should say.
Yeah, and I think really one of the most interesting things that happened on Jeopardy within the last few years is that, you know, the biggest winner in the show's history, Ken Jennings, is now the host.
Right. Yeah, he's the host.
Isn't
now.
That interesting?
Yeah.
Yeah,
well, for what, a short time, though, they had him and Mayim Bialik as the host.
Yeah.
Like they were kind of splitting it, and then they took her off and are keeping him on as full time.
I mean, Ken Jennings.
So, yeah, Ken Jennings actually.
This guy is a multimillionaire now.
Yeah, so I'm he sure. joined in I the mean, last season with Alex Trebek as a producer, and that's how he got the opportunity to become host, because he made the transition from contestant to producer to host. I think he is actually still a producer.
Now, he was one of the longest running people that ever won on there, right?
Yes. He won 74 games.
74
so
games. Wow.
Originally, the limit was 5 games for many, many years. It wasn't until its 20th season that they eliminated that limit so that anyone can keep going as long as they keep winning.
Wow.
And so he appeared the next year and won 74 games, $2.5 million.
Oh my gosh.
I can't even imagine. That's
no.
That's like going to school and taking however many quizzes you need daily for 74.
I mean, does he even get any answers wrong?
He does. He did from time to time.
I mean, he plays on there's another game he plays on too now.
He's been on a lot of game shows over the years.
I'm trying to remember the game show he does that Tony watches, and this is horrible that I can't. It's called Chase.
The Chase, yes.
Ken Jennings is on.
Yeah, he was a chaser on The Chase for a while.
And Jeopardy now, oh my gosh, this guy just made his name in gaming shows.
Yeah, good for him. Like, yeah, just this like small-looking guy from Salt Lake City.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, it's humble beginnings.
I like The Chase, too. I actually like that. It's a newer game, of course, but I like watching that sometimes.
Yeah, so that format originated in the UK in the late 2000s. And they had a number of chasers there that were very interesting. They had the Duchess and most notably the Beast. And so they brought it to the U.S. 10 years ago, I think actually 11 years ago now, on the Game Show Network. That was originally a Game Show Network show where they had the Beast as the chaser. And that was on the air for several years. It was very, very well received. The entire game show audience loved it. But for some reason, about 2 years into the run, the Game Show Network canceled it. And then eventually, 5 or 6 years later, ABC revives it. And they brought on, originally it was just Jeopardy champions as the chasers, but they actually brought back the Beast at one point.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah, so.
I didn't know about the Beast, but I do know that I love that show too. And I like Let's not not Let's Make a Deal. Is that the one, Let's Make a Deal, where they have like, now this is horrible because I don't watch game shows too often, but it's the one with the cases where you pick the number, right?
Deal or No Deal.
That's Deal or No Deal with Howie Mandel originally.
See, it shows how much I know about game shows. That's horrible.
Deal or No Deal is one heck of a format. It's very interesting how that one has a lot of international versions.
Yes.
And yeah, Howie Mandel did a fantastic job hosting the U.S. version, without question.
Well, now they have a new one on NBC, which is on an island with Joe Mantegna or whoever now hosting it.
Yeah, I heard about that. I didn't actually watch it because it didn't really sound like it was up my alley.
It's different. I'll put it that way.
Right.
It's like taking Survivor and mixing it with the show.
Yeah, I don't know how much I would enjoy that, to be honest.
It's not the same.
Right. But in the UK, they had a version with Noel Edmonds, who was a big variety show host in England for many years. And the UK version is something else if you've never seen it before. It's like kind of a cult if you like watch enough episodes of it. They have like a lot of like weird behaviors that they do. They like bow when they are chosen to be the player.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very psychological with the banker. Like the banker is like very personified in that version. He tries to read the opponent as carefully as possible, evaluate if they're a gambler or if they're going to be very cautious. And the offers are generally very low, but it creates a bigger risk in playing on because you have to open multiple boxes at a time each round. In the US version, it reaches the point where you only open one case at a time. It doesn't happen in the UK. So there's a very large chance of you going home with nothing.
Oh my
if you
gosh.
Don't take a deal. So yeah. it's fascinating to watch. It's like from a psychological viewpoint, it is probably one of the best game shows I've ever seen. But it can be very off-putting if you've never seen it before, because it can resemble a cult in some ways.
I've never seen that either, but are those fear factors supposed to be gamed towards game shows?
Fear factor?
Yeah. I mean, it seems like it's, you know, they're competing against each other for money.
So what do you mean?
Like the show Fear Factor.
Fear Factor.
Is that almost like...
I guess that is a game show in a way.
I mean, would it be considered in a way a game show? Because they're going for money against each other.
Yeah, I guess it kind of is. Yeah, it's like somewhere between game show and reality TV.
Yeah, it seems like it's almost like a half and half.
Yeah, that was an interesting show, but I could never get too into it. I thought some of the challenges spooked me out too much.
Yeah, some of it was really, really creepy.
I was not a fan.
I would never do any of that for money.
I know even... Just no.
Yeah. There was another show that was on around the same time called Dog Eat Dog. That one was a little more closer to a traditional game show, but that was another one where they would have the contestants do these really hard physical challenges. And at the end of the show, it all came down to, like, this was such a bizarre way to decide who gets the money. But there would be the top dog who eliminates all the other players by getting them to do physical challenges that they fail or succeeding at the physical challenge that they did. And then the rest of the contestants were the dog pound. And then the way that they decide who would get the money is that they would do a trivia game where the top dog would ask the dog pound, you know, these questions and decide who is least likely to know the answer. And if the dog pound fails to get enough correct answers, then the top dog gets all the money. But if the dog pound gets enough correct answers, they split the money. It was weird show.
Yeah,
it was weird.
I never even heard of it.
Yeah,
never
Dog Eat Dog was the name of it.
Wow. What do you think about like Big Brother?
Oh, I never got into that.
Okay.
Yeah, I never got into that.
Because it has some elements of like a game show, but it's also the reality TV setup too.
Yeah, that's pretty firmly in reality TV territory compared to what I like to watch.
I watched it one season. One season. That's all I could take.
That's
I was
fair.
Good.
That's very fair.
Just know.
Yep.
All right. So this one's going to be a tough one for Connor, but we're going to save it for the next round whenever we come back from our little song break. Remember the music? Remember the movies? Remember the cars, the fashions, the news, the things that stood out during our youth? It's okay to be nerdy. Join me as I reminisce over the cartoons, the toys, and the video games of the 70s, 80s, and 90s. Turn back the clock with Retro Talk.
Weekends on 98.5 XPM's Million Dollar Weekend Lineup.
For you Tattletale fans of the game show, let's see how much Connor knows about this show.
Oh, oh yes. I think he's going to know a little bit.
Just a little bit.
This is like my dad's least favorite game show of all time. So this is basically a newlywed game knockoff where they have three celebrity couples. Once again, quote unquote celebrities. Many of them were famous for being on game shows and little else. But yeah, they would be asked, you know, these saucy questions about their married life. And then their spouse would have to answer it. And if they matched, they won money for the audience. They won money for their cheering section. The audience was divided into three sections. It looked like an arena. It was actually a really cool set design. And then whoever that actually, they all got to win the money. Every section got money from the couple they were rooting for. But the couple that got the most answers correct would get bonus money added to that. So obviously there was an incentive to root for your favorite couple on that show. It was interesting. I actually kind of like it. I thought it was a decent show, but my dad absolutely hates it outside of the theme song.
Now, see, that's a show that I didn't really remember. And when did it air, though?
It aired from 1974 to 1978.
So it's definitely old school.
It's old school. And then it actually got revived in 1982 until 1984.
Wow. Okay, so yeah. Short runs. I don't remember it at all. Like, I think that was just before my time. And
that shows you how much Connor knows.
Yeah. Absolutely. It still airs in reruns to this day. You can watch it on Buzzer. It's on all the time.
Yeah, oh, I'll have to look that one up, Tattletales. Yeah. And so I would like to touch a few others.
Absolutely.
Base on a few others.
Yeah, go ahead.
Tic-tac-toe.
Oh, wow.
The one and only Wink Martindale. Yes.
Yeah, with the dragon.
The dragon.
Yes.
Dragon.
Yes.
Tony says that used to scare him a lot. He's in the basement.
It scared a lot of people, apparently. I've been seeing a lot of reflections on that show, and a lot of people did get scared of that dragon.
It was just a little harmless dragon.
I know. It was harmless. I agree. I didn't see it when I was a kid, though. I didn't see it until, I was out of high school, I think, was when I first saw that show.
Yeah, that was actually a fun one. My mom used to watch that all the time, too. How about Press Your Luck?
Press Your Luck. Oh, my goodness.
No whammies, no whammies.
No whammies.
Yeah. Oh, but you got to love the whammy, like, you know.
Yeah.
What were some of the things that he would say? Like, I cannot tell a lie, you lose. Like that, right?
The animation was so cheesy, but it was so good.
It was so good. It kind of reminded me of like the Smurfs, the way that the whammies came out.
They never came out with a whammy stuffed doll. I would buy that in a heartbeat.
I would buy that. Yeah, they never came out with that. Yeah, because that would have been a great merchandising tie-in for sure. Mm-hmm. But
he kind of looked like a stretched out version of the Noid from Domino's.
Oh, yeah.
Or was the Noid just a squeezed in version of the whammy?
Possibly. But something that we were talking about before we started recording this episode is that there was a contestant in the 80s, actually 40 years ago this year, 1984, there was a contestant named Michael Larson.
Yes, so, I know this story.
Yeah, so the board patterns were not exactly random. They were a set of patterns that went in a certain order every time. And there was an ice cream truck driver who didn't work the other months of the year who saw this show on TV and decided that there had to be a code behind it, behind the way that the board worked. So he recorded episodes on his VCR and would keep rewinding it, playing it. And he realized that there is indeed a pattern that they follow. And he realized that there was a way to hit the top spot on the board every time. The one that gives you the most money.
That reminds me. Now, you're not talking about Monk, right? Because that happened in Monk.
No. Maybe Monk was inspired by this.
Yeah, because there was an episode where they had that in a game show. There was a signal. The guy was given a signal. And they couldn't figure out why, this contestant was always winning.
Yeah, so
it was a Monk episode.
Similar. Yeah, so Michael Larson figured out the game pattern, and he won over $100,000 in one game of Press Your Luck. The top win prior to that was like $25,000.
Now, did he get to keep the money?
He got to keep the money.
Hey.
CBS was very skeptical about it because they caught on to what he was doing, but they decided that he did it fair and square.
Right.
And he was allowed to keep the money. And then immediately after he left the show, they added four times the number of patterns so that nobody could ever figure it out.
Yeah, so they couldn't. Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah, so it's a crazy story. But then there was another story about Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. So you remember Who Wants to Be a Millionaire,
yeah.
right?
Yeah,
that was a huge show.
Regis Philbin started it. Yeah. And, yep.
So that was a huge show everywhere around the world. I think it actually holds the record for the most international adaptations of a game show ever. It started in the UK in 1998 with a host called Chris Tarrant, who is one heck of a character if you've never seen the original British version before. But on that UK version, there was a contestant who was a retired military man, or... He actually was like a young man. He was honorably discharged.
Uh-huh.
But he had a plan where they had that little, like, you know, ring of contestants behind the hot seat who would, you know, answer the fastest finger question. And then that decides who gets to play the game. So he was friends with one of his fellow contestants. And this guy that he was friends with was like, a very, very, very well-read guy. He was very intelligent. Yeah. He knew most of the answers to every question on the show. So what would happen is that every time he knew the answer to the question, he would cough after the host read off the correct answer. And then he would he would answer the question correctly. So remember that Who Wants to Be a Millionaire had a lot of cliffhanger episodes, right? Where
right.
the contestant would come back the next
yeah,
day.
Yeah, yep.
So when this guy was first chosen to play, the military guy, he blew through all the lifelines super quickly. He was not exactly the smartest guy. He didn't really know a lot of the answers. But then, his friend was a fastest finger contestant the next day. And every single time there was a question that was read, he would cough after the answer that was correct was read. And he ended up winning the $1 million, or not $1 million, £1 million in the UK. And they could tell immediately that something was completely off about this.
Yeah.
Wow.
And guess what ended up happening?
He lost the money, right? He got in trouble for
it. Not only did he lose the money, he was criminally convicted.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's kind of like the Monk episode.
Yeah.
It's kind of like the Monk episode.
That might be what the Monk episode is based off of. It might have been based off of that more so than Michael Larson.
You know, and speaking of that, we don't have much time more left for this episode. But speaking of Monk,
mm-hmm.
there's a lot of things that actually had game shows mentioned in them, like movies, television shows. Can you tell me, either of you, where You Can't Win was aired? It was a game show on a movie.
Oh,
I don't know that one.
No,
I don't know that.
You can't
I'm
win.
I'm stumped. Yep, you got me for once.
All right, that is actually on Stay Tuned with John Ritter.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
All right, this one you guys should be able to guess.
Okay.
Pig in a Poke.
I don't know that one either.
Oh, yeah.
European Vacation.
Tony. Oh, yeah. Okay.
We heard from Tony in the basement. He got it.
Yeah, yay. He got it. There's a lot of game shows, though, that have been on television shows, you know, where they kind of copy shows.
Yep.
They have
I remember the Golden
things.
Girls grabbed that dough. I remember
yes.
that.
I never seen that one. Yeah, there
yeah,
was
a fun one.
Can you guys think of any other movies or TV shows that actually just kind of like had
made up something?
Made
or?
Up, I mean, even Supernatural had it.
Supernatural
yeah. had one where it was a Japanese Oriental type game show.
I remember Degrassi. Degrassi, The Next Generation, they had Whack Your Brain. And it was a quiz show. It was like, you know, kind of like...
No, I never saw that either.
It was something that you would see on PBS. Like, they modeled it after like a PBS type quiz show between high schools. And what ended up happening is that this guy who was... It's a long story. You'd have to watch Degrassi to really know what I'm talking about here. But...
Now, this is on Next Generation.
Yeah, in the 2000s. So, yeah, he was a bullying target. So he won the game show, but then they organized a prank on him where he had paint spilled on him.
Oh.
And then, yeah, he was publicly humiliated. He comes back and shoots up the school.
Oh.
What?
Yeah, really dark. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the most famous episode of the entire show, actually. So, yeah. So Whack Your Brain was the quiz show on that Degrassi
episode. And was, you know, we still got a few more minutes. So was, You Can't Do That on television wasn't a game show, but they used to pour stuff over your head a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nickelodeon. Nickelodeon. Yeah.
Yeah. They would slime you or something.
Yeah.
They would slime you if
really
you said,
show,
I don't know.
When you said that poured it over your head, Yeah, you said I don't know.
Yeah, and then that became Nickelodeon's shtick when they did a Double Dare.
Yeah,
they
had all the slime from that as well. Yes, exactly. Yeah, Double Dare was a very messy, messy, messy game.
Which originated here in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, actually, do you know the host of that one, Connor?
Mark Summers, of course.
Yeah, I mean, we've tried to meet up with him a couple times. We were at a toy show about a year or so ago, wanted to meet him, and he left just before he got there.
Oh, too bad.
We wanted to meet him, yeah. Maybe someday.
Maybe someday.
Maybe someday we can get him on here.
That would be awesome.
We can have him test Connor.
Yeah, we can do it like...
Oh, that would be a show.
That's right. Yeah, we could do some banter. Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah, have him test Connor, and if he doesn't get it right, he'll end up getting slimed.
Oh, absolutely.
Slimed with a pizza slice
or something. I'm all for it. All for it. Let's do it.
We'll lay down the tarp and make it good.
Yeah, make it good. We don't really have too much time left. Can you guys say hello and tell everyone thank you for listening?
Absolutely. This is the Bro Show. Thank you for letting me reminisce about game shows.
Yep, and this has been Connor Cohan, producer of Retro Talk. Happy to chip in my 2 cents on this subject.
And we're happy to have Connor again. We would love to have him back.
Oh, absolutely.
I will always come back to this show. Absolutely. Thank you, Rose.
Thanks for joining us at Retro Talk.
Come sponsor Retro Talk, where your support keeps us on the air. If you want more information, send an email to wxpm985@gmail.com and we'll send you our brochure.
You've been listening to
Retro Talk with Retro Rose
here on
98.5 WXPM.
Be back next week, same time, same channel.